This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Firearms deer season is here. We heard that report in the news a moment ago. Adam Carter from our newsroom is out in the field trying to bag a deer. So a lot of firearms out and about today across the state of Minnesota. It's a great tradition. And speaking of firearms, we're going to talk about that on the program today. Tom, great to see you again.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, it is great to be back here. And I'd say we're fired up for the program today, but we want to make it clear we are not taking sides in the debate that continues to surround the use of firearms and the regulation of the use of firearms. And today we have with us back again on short turnaround, maybe the fourth or fifth time or maybe more than that, Matthew Meyer, a shareholder with Moss and Barnett. Matthew, good morning.
Well, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Steve. It's great to be back again to discuss something that is somewhat near and dear to me. I am a permit holder myself, and it is interesting the timeliness of this topic, given the fact that Wisconsin just enacted and put into place their concealed carry law that went into effect November 1st.
Right, a law that has generated a fair amount of publicity and controversy, just as Minnesota's law, similar law, enacted, maybe a decade or so ago, and we'll get into the background of that, too, also did. And, of course, again, I want to stress that the business law firm of Moss & Barnett does not take a side on this issue. Indeed, our clients have opinions that that run the gamut, the entire spectrum of those in favor and those not in favor of any aspect of this we'll be mentioning. So with that background, Matthew, let's talk about the regulation of carrying handguns primarily. That's the focus today.
Yes, Tom, and you mentioned some of the controversies surrounding the Second Amendment issues. The focus of this presentation is to answer a lot of questions that especially non-permit holders may have about the general law, you know, what their rights are, what the process involves, and some of the requirements for permit holders. Quite frankly, the permit holders, at least in Minnesota, have already gone through the required course under the statute and are already familiar with many of the issues that I'll discuss today. So there are a lot of people out there with a lot of questions and uncertainty as to what the law actually involves.
Sure. The law, in short, has two aspects, or at least two aspects. And one is, of course, the consideration of the right to bear arms. And the other are the public safety issues surrounding who has the right and to carry arms and concealed and carried weapons can or not be used. And we've had some recent examples of that, even including here just a week or so ago in the Twin Cities.
Yes, Tom, I'm sure many of our listeners are aware of the situation involving a concealed carry permit holder who actually had to, unfortunately, discharge his firearm and ended up mortally wounding or killing a perpetrator who had been involved in a mugging.
Right, and that involves the consideration of when it is lawful to use deadly force in the context of witnessing and trying to stop a crime or to prevent an assault in self-defense.
Yes, I'll discuss the use of deadly force later, and many of the listeners who have permit holders are actually taught in the use of deadly force. But one thing that is important to note in dealing with the Ivanovich situation, and there's a lot of questions I have about exactly what happened.
Now, and that's the situation that we referred to a moment ago where deadly force was used in the interdiction of a crime in progress.
Yes, and one thing that is impressed upon the permit holders when they go through the courses is that deadly force is only allowed in order to prevent the use of force.
Deadly force
against yourself or against others. It is not permissible to use deadly force or threaten deadly force to protect property.
Well, in that context, then, how does that account for the recent episode in Texas where as I understand it, a party carrying a handgun saw a crime and was not in any threat, nor was the victim of the crime in any threat, but called in what happened to 9/11. And maybe you can recount that for us, Matthew.
Well, I'm sure many of the listeners have actually probably heard the recording, the 911 recording of the property owner. Now,
What happened, maybe just briefly?
The neighbor, the person who had called 911, observed some burglars who were robbing his unoccupied neighbor's residence. And while he was on the phone and waiting for the law enforcement response, the burglars, with their loot in hand, ended up walking away from the property. And the person who was on the phone actually told the 911 operator that he was going to go shoot them to prevent them from leaving. And he actually did. I believe both of them were mortally wounded. And the question was whether he was allowed to use deadly force to prevent the theft of his neighbor's property when there wasn't any apparent threat to himself or to his neighbor.
And normally the answer under Minnesota law, and I gather under Texas law, would be that that was actually a crime to commit.
Yes, it is. But fortunately, well, I shouldn't say fortunately, but what eventually transpired in that is that there was jury nullification. The jury was sympathetic enough with his situation that they found him not guilty of any crime.
We don't talk about the doctrine of jury nullification very often. It doesn't come up a lot, but it is something that is the right of a jury to absolutely decide to not apply the law as written and to, in effect, vote to nullify it. That really only comes into play in criminal cases, as I understand it. But, it is a common law doctrine of ancient and longstanding.
And one thing to keep in mind, especially the courses that I have taken for the concealed carry permit, they stress erring on the side of caution, erring on the side of avoiding a situation, even though you may be legally entitled to, and you, if all the facts were clearly known by the fact finder, that you wouldn't be prosecuted or subject to civil liability, you should err on the side of avoiding getting into that situation and avoiding any liability.
Certainly a fair amount of the controversy surrounding this topic arises from and circulates around, I should say, the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, our federal constitution, which has been recently interpreted to allow at least some measure of bearing arms, including concealed and carried handguns.
Yes, the famous McDonald, or actually it began with the Heller case that scrutinized a District of Columbia law that effectively banned any kind of weapons by their citizens. The wave of legislation that has advanced the concealed carry right actually began before Heller. And, at this point, there's probably about 48 states or jurisdictions that allow concealed carry permits and are favorable to the shall issue approach to allowing their citizens to carry.
So to be clear, the United States Supreme Court ruled that there is, at least to some extent, a right by private citizens to bear arms, and that includes concealed handguns.
Yes, the focus of Heller, which was eventually applied to the states in the Supreme Court decision of McDonald, was that the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment didn't deal with the militia argument. It dealt with the personal and individual right to defend oneself by use of a firearm.
And as you were mentioning, both before and after the landmark Heller decision, states had begun to enact conceal and carry permitting laws, including Minnesota, I might add. And as you're pointing out, those state statutes have made it mandatory that the legal authorities, the criminal justice system, shall issue permits. That's a key concept in these statutes.
And that seems to be the popular approach to these types of statutes in various states.
We have more on the way. Great topic on the program today. Tom Schroyer hosting Matthew Meyer. Don't shoot from the hip. Understanding gun regulation here in Minnesota and here in the United States. We'll continue in a moment. A News Radio 830 WCECO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know a team of Moss and Barnett attorneys worked on the appeal of the case that served as the basis for the motion picture, North Country?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios in downtown Minneapolis, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. And for more info on today's program and all our shows, including podcasts, go online. That is moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer is in, hosting Matthew Meyer. He's back. Quick turnaround. We were joking with Matthew. Fairly regular appearance on the program here. Today, though, understanding gun regulation, and this is definitely a hot topic, and it seems to go in waves, Tom and Matthew. There's no question that there will be an incident or there will be a case, and it'll come back to the fore fairly quickly.
Exactly right. Just, of course, recently the tragic shooting down in Arizona, and so people rightly wonder, how do folks with problems like the perpetrator of the shooting of Congresswoman Gifford get their weapons? And of course, Wisconsin now in the news with just this past Tuesday, a new law going into effect there that authorizes the permitting of weapons to be carried by people without in a concealed fashion. And so, Matthew, that Wisconsin law is what prompted us to do the topic here today that we're about to continue with, and that is concealed and carrying of weapons. How does the Wisconsin law work?
Well, Tom, first I'd like to mention that just recently on October 20th, the Department of Justice in Wisconsin published the emergency guidelines to implement the statute and have stated that Minnesota permits will be allowed in Wisconsin. Now, of course, a Minnesota permit holder, even though the permit is from Minnesota, must comply with Wisconsin laws as it relates to their right to conceal carry within Wisconsin. So that's what prompted today's program to sort of review some of the basic requirements of the permitting process in both Minnesota and Wisconsin, which have very similar laws when it comes to the individual requirements, the general approach. There are some minor differences, some major differences, but for the most part, they're very consistent. But it is important that if there are Minnesota permit holders out there who wish to travel in Wisconsin, or perhaps have a lake home in Wisconsin, or travel there for business, that they need to comply with Wisconsin law.
And do both Minnesota and Wisconsin laws have what we were talking about before the break, and that is the mandatory shall issue language in their statutes?
Yes, Tom, and that was a major issue during the legislative process that led up to it in both Minnesota and Wisconsin. So they are shall issue laws, which means for our listeners that unless there is a specific statutory reason why the Department of Justice, in the case of Wisconsin, or the local sheriff, in the case of Minnesota, unless there's some specific articulable reason under the statute for refusing the permit, that the permit must issue.
What are those specific statutory reasons for denying someone the right to carry a concealed weapon?
Well, the basic requirements, of course, in Wisconsin, you have to be a Wisconsin resident, which is not the case in Minnesota. The Minnesota applicant doesn't necessarily need to be a Minnesota resident. But in both states, the applicant must be 21 years of age. And in both states, there has to be a training certification submitted as part of the application.
Let's come back in a moment and talk about that as you continue to run down what the requirements are and what the bases are under the law for declining to issue a permit.
Yes, Tom. And one thing that is somewhat common, although the language in each of the statutes is somewhat different, but of course there has to be a background check on the applicants. And the background checks are handled by the issuing authority, whether the Department of Justice in Wisconsin or the sheriff in Minnesota. But they have to review the available databases, the NCIS, the national database, including the state databases, to ensure that the applicant is not a felon. Because typically felons are not allowed to receive a concealed carry permit. And there are certain orders. If a court has ordered that the applicant not be allowed to carry a weapon, institutionalized persons are typically not permitted to have a permit. So there are a number of sort of common sense reasons why a particular person would not be allowed a permit.
All right. Now, but how far does that go? For example, in the Arizona shooting that we were just talking about, and in any number of the others that we've heard about in recent years and past years, it seems like the perpetrator is perhaps has not had a criminal background. They may be mentally ill, but they don't show up in any databases as such. And they're loners, and maybe they're obsessing about something. And nobody knows that really for sure. And certainly we can't expect the sheriff or the Department of Justice in Wisconsin to have an understanding about that. So these people end up getting guns.
Well, that is probably an inherent uncertainty in terms of issuing a permit to any citizen, what will happen in the future. I'm not sure if the perpetrator in that instance actually had a concealed carry permit or what the circumstances were. But in Minnesota, there is sort of a general catch-all category that a sheriff can refuse a permit if they have a reasonable basis for believing that the applicant will be a threat to himself or others.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between 11 and noon. Today, Tom Schroyer hosting Matthew Meyer. Don't shoot from the hip. Understanding gun regulation will continue in a moment. The weather coming up. News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between 11 and noon. Tom Schroyer in studio, hosting Matthew Meyer. Don't shoot from the hip. Understanding gun regulation. Certainly a very timely topic. And, of course, with all the deer hunters out in the field, a lot of firearms out and about in the fields and the woods around the state of Minnesota.
Precisely, Steve, and also, of course, the week when the Wisconsin concealed carry law first took effect, and that law dovetails very closely with Minnesota's now longstanding conceal and carry law. And we talked a bit before the last break about how the permitting process works and the fact that it is mandatory and that there are some safeguards built in. Does Wisconsin have a safeguard similar to Minnesota's?
Yes, they do. They have the basic requirements, the background checks, and the restrictions on issuance of concealed carry permits to certain individuals.
We wanted to circle back on a point you mentioned during your discussion a moment ago, and that is that in order to get a permit, individuals must have had gun safety training. Would you tell us what that entails?
Well, in both statutes, there is the training requirement, and in fact, anybody interested could go to the Department of Justice website in Wisconsin, and they actually have the training suggested training materials there that lays out a lot of the curriculum for it. But the training has to involve a component of safety considerations. Of course, safety is paramount. I was in the Marines, and safety is always number one when it comes to handling weapons and making sure that you're aware of their operation and can operate them properly.
And I know that we mentioned at the top of the hour when we began our show that you are a concealed permit holder, and you've been through the training. How would you describe it?
It is quite rigorous and comprehensive, and I think the people out there who may be concerned about there being fellow citizens with concealed weapons carrying with permits, they would be impressed with the level of training that is out there. Not only are there safety considerations, how to properly handle and store firearms, but some very rigorous training in terms of the legal restrictions and the requirements. Of course, each of the laws has restrictions on where a concealed permit holder can actually carry their weapons. For instance, courthouses and
let's talk through that. In addition, do you get instruction in this training about when it is or is not lawful to discharge a firearm?
Yes, Tom. In both states, there is a requirement that there be training in the use of deadly force for obvious reasons. If we're going to allow our citizens to carry weapons in public, they have to be aware of the restrictions on when or when they cannot use it.
Now, is there some registration system, some database for compliance with the training for certification of compliance, or is this a situation where people can just make it up when they go in and apply for their permit?
This is not the latter. Both states have some very rigorous requirements for certifying instructors. Wisconsin may be somewhat more permissive in alternative certifications. For instance, they will recognize military training as satisfying that requirement, as well as training from other states. Minnesota is much more rigorous in terms of certifying the particular courses and instructions, and only allowing those types of training.
Now, of course, people are concerned about not having guns in inappropriate locations. Are there restrictions on where a concealed weapon can be carried in Wisconsin and in Minnesota?
Yes, and of course, if anybody is interested in the particulars, they should refer to the law itself. But you know, generally, both states restrict the use of or the carrying of loaded, uncased weapons in especially courthouses, law enforcement facilities, schools, and school events, which in Minnesota would include child care facilities. If you are a concealed carry permit holder and you have a child in child care, you know, leave the weapon at home or in your vehicle if you go into the facility because it's illegal to carry it in there.
How about churches?
Churches, there is no per se restriction of carrying weapons, but churches are given more latitude in Minnesota in terms of restricting the carrying of weapons in their facilities. However, there is a default in terms of any public or private location in that the carrying of weapons cannot be restricted from parking lots or parking ramps. So a church parking lot, you can leave your weapon in your vehicle. But if the church decides that they are restricting the carrying of weapons inside, then you have to leave it out there.
Now, we talked about the distinction between public and private property a moment ago. What if a bar owner or a nightclub wants to prohibit someone from carrying concealed weapons into their nightclub? Is that lawful?
Yes, it is in both states. And in both states, there are posting requirements. In terms of a private or even a public property owner or occupant of property, they can restrict the public's ability to carry weapons onto that. The key is that they have to provide notice. And in Minnesota, there are very strict guidelines on what that notice will look like, what the wording is, what the where it will be posted. And in Wisconsin, they're somewhat more relaxed in exactly how the sign will look, but they have to be posted in a certain location next to each entrance going into the property. Now, the one difference between Wisconsin and Minnesota is that in Wisconsin, they explicitly allow a person to conceal carry in a tavern, but they are strictly prohibited from consuming alcohol. Whereas in Minnesota, there is a 0.04 blood alcohol content limit on somebody who is concealed carrying, which, of course, is below the typical standard.
0.08 for driving while intoxicated.
Correct. So it's half the blood alcohol level of being able to operate a vehicle.
We will have more on the way. Don't shoot from the hip. Understanding gun regulation on the program today. Tom Schroyer hosting Matthew Meyer. By the way, for more info on today's program and all our other programs, go online, moss-barnett.com. Minnesota Law will return in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss and Barnett attorney Clifford A. Taney Jr. went on to fame while serving during World War II as general counsel to the super-secret nuclear development program of the U.S. Army, known as the Manhattan Project?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturdays between 11 and noon. For more info on today's show and all our other programs, including podcasts, go online, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer hosting Matthew Meyer today. Don't shoot from the hip, understanding gun regulation.
Matthew, we're talking about the restrictions that can be placed on even folks who have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. We talked about, you know, the public limitations on courthouses using use and the ability of schools to preclude them. And we talked about private business owners being able to exclude concealed and carried weapons. What about the homeowner, private property owner, or the apartment owner?
That's a good question, Tom. I'm sure that there are a lot of landlords out there who are wondering whether they're commercial or resident landlords, to what extent can they restrict the carrying of armed weapons on their properties. And the rule in both Wisconsin and Minnesota is that a landlord cannot restrict an occupant's, the tenant's, ability to carry weapons on the property.
What about a private homeowner?
A private homeowner can, and in fact, of course, a private homeowner doesn't even need a permit to have to carry a loaded weapon. But a private homeowner can restrict it. Obviously, any guests on the property would have to be asked to leave, and if they fail to leave, once asked to, if they're carrying a weapon, then they could be guilty of a trespass.
But as you're saying, the situation becomes much more complicated for a landlord who is operating a multifamily unit.
Certainly, Tom, as we're all aware, the property may consist of individual residential units, but it may have common areas. The rule is generally that the landlord can restrict the use of or the carrying of weapons in the common areas, for instance, a community room. But the landlord cannot restrict the occupants, basically the tenants or the tenants' guests, from carrying weapons on the property, because ultimately it's the decision of the tenant rather than the landlord. And the same essentially applies to commercial property as well.
So if I'm a landlord, I can prevent folks from having weapons in the community room, maybe the washroom. But I can't prohibit folks from having weapons in their own apartments. What about the hallways, getting the weapons to and from the apartment unit? Can I prohibit that?
No, you cannot, if it would restrict the ability of guests or the tenants from reaching their individual lease premises.
You know, and it's amazing to me because landlords are being increasingly called upon, especially in some of our more dense urban areas, cities, to regulate the conduct of tenants, including the use of drugs and partying and the like. And so this seems to be a little bit inconsistent with that.
Well, one interesting aspect, particularly of the Wisconsin law, is the immunity provisions that they've included in the statute. In other words, whether it's a property owner, perhaps a business, perhaps a landlord, or an employer, which we haven't discussed, but employers are able to restrict the carrying of weapons by their employees, except, as I mentioned earlier, in the parking lots or parking ramps, even if the employer owns that. But in Wisconsin, there is a provision that grants the employer or property owner immunity from the decision to allow weapons on their property because of that decision.
Interesting. I know at our law firm we have a policy prohibiting the retention of weapons during the workday at our firm. And if an employee wants to carry a weapon to our firm, they have to make arrangements ahead of time to let us know, and then we will store it in a safe, locked location during the day and then return it to them as they leave for the evening.
And yes, Tom, and as I mentioned, in both states, employers are given their ability to regulate, restrict, or actually prohibit the carrying of weapons.
We have one more segment to go on the program today. Don't Shoot from the Hip, Understanding Gun Regulation. Tom Schroyer is our host. Matthew Meyer is in studio on the program today. Don't forget, Minnesota Law comes your way each and every Saturday between 11 and noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Live, local, and late breaking. News Radio 830 WCCO. Also heard on FM at 102.9 WLTE HD2.
Welcome back one more time. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett, Tom Schroyer, Matthew Meyer in studio. Don't Shoot from the Hip, Understanding Gun Regulation Laws here in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Boy, the show has just flown by with Matthew Meyer, and we want to wrap up quickly with a little bit of advice for folks who may be traveling here during hunting season, crossing state lines, flying out to a hunting trip, or even a snowbird heading down to points south and wanting to carry a gun with them. Matthew, any thoughts on what those people should be thinking about?
Yes, Tom. They really have to plan ahead if they intend to take their weapons with them when they travel by air. The TSA has a website that discusses many of the federal requirements when it comes to transporting firearms, but they should check, the traveler should check with the individual airline, because the airlines are allowed within a certain parameter to add their own restrictions on how it is. But the process is simply that the firearm has to be declared to the airline at the time of the check-in, and the firearm must be unloaded, of course, and packed in a hard-sided container. Typically, or as required on the federal statute, the only person with the key to that container must be the person traveling. In other words, so nobody else has access to it. And the ammunition must be, it can't be, you know, kept in a magazine. It has to be packed individually. And that's where a lot of the individual airlines will have differing requirements. So if you travel, ask them specifically about packing ammunition if that's your intent.
What about driving from here to, say, Arizona or Florida for a snowbird? What advice do you have for them?
Well, and I've traveled across state lines as well, and the main thing is to look at the individual states. There are some websites out there that have a lot of information, but they may not be up to date. So it's best to consult with government websites in terms of what their regulations are in transporting, whether they accept the Minnesota or Wisconsin permits to carry, and what restrictions there are in the individual states. The restrictions vary significantly from what establishments can you can carry in. So a traveler should be aware of the restrictions in each state in which they're going to traverse on their travels.
So the key point is having a permit in Minnesota or Wisconsin doesn't assure a person of the right to maintain that that weapon and conceal carry it in another state.
Certainly not. And if you look at some of the maps that will show which states recognize other states' concealed carry permits and additional restrictions, it's just a patchwork of different laws. So you really have to research exactly what is required.
All right. Well, Matthew, again, thank you very much. It's been a great program. We'll have to have you back on again to talk more about this deadly force issue. And, yes, you have another quick point?
As a Marine, I have to wish all the Marines out there a happy birthday. November 10th is the Marine Corps birthday, Semper Fi.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for your service and for all of your colleagues in the Marines and the Armed Forces for their service, too.
Matthew Meyer, once again. Tom Schroyer, Don't Shoot from the Hip, Understanding Gun Regulation. Tom, what have we got coming up next week?
Cindy Ackerman and I will be live, Steve, at the WCCO Pre-Tirement Expo, which is being held at the DoubleTree Hotel in Bloomington, Minnesota, talking about estate planning, all of the basics.
That is next Saturday between 11 and noon, right here on News Radio 830 WCCO. By the way, for more info on today's program and all our other programs, go online. The website is moss-barnett.com.